Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, March 16th, 2019. This is episode 1574. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the simplest cloud platform for developers and teams. Deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. Wow, hello. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. Well, we got all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're outside that area, you could still reach us. No problem. You just have to use Skype or something like that, right, to call us. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Or Skype if you want to get us free from the rest of the world. Website is techguylabs.com. I almost said the tech site is webguylabs. That's not right. The website is techguylabs.com. A couple of big stories this week in the news. I should mention, if you use a program called WinRAR, you need to update it. 500 million people use WinRAR on Windows to unzip and unRAR and unarchive files. It's very common. And there's a massive security flaw in WinRAR. And if you get the latest version, you should be okay. You want WinRAR 5.70 beta. It was released January 28th, but you have to get it manually. It doesn't have an auto update in it, which means that most of those half billion users are probably sitting there with an out-of-date version. So this is a public service announcement. Get the new version of WinRAR if you're using it on Windows. The exploit allows a bad guy to take over your computer, and it's being widely used at this point. In fact, according to Symantec, at least 100, I'm sorry, I think it was Checkpoint, not Symantec, Checkpoint Security, another security company, at least 100 exploits in the wild. So here's one. It has it's in Ukrainian. It's targeting Ukraine with a Ukrainian law. PDF document is embedded. It drops a file to execute PowerShell scripts, and once that's happened, you can kiss your computer goodbye. Another campaign that used a lure about the United Nations and human rights to target users in the Middle East. These both seem to come from intelligence services engaged in cyber espionage. When President Trump was in Vietnam for his summit with Kim Jong-un, there were malicious archives, WinRAR archives, sent to South Korean government agencies. That probably came from North Korea, we would think. In fact, North Korea seems to have not abated any of its hacking during that summit. It was an opportunity. So just I like to do a little public service announcement now and then, since probably many of you are still using older versions. You have to go to the WinRAR site and download an updated version, or maybe get rid of WinRAR. Apparently, this was a threat in WinRAR, built in for 14 years, only just now discovered. Yikes. And sometimes what happens is, this is Israeli firm Checkpoint that discovered it. It discovered it independently, but what is often the case is it's been known for years by security agencies, bad guys, hackers, and so forth. And, of course, nobody don't tell anybody. We don't want them to fix it. So that's why it's a big issue. Little battle going on between Apple and Spotify. Spotify created a website complaining about, it's called Time to Play Fair, Apple, complaining about Apple's 30% charge Spotify subscribers who are subscribing through Apple's store. TimeToPlayFair.com says Apple's being anti-competitive. Apple released a press release with their side of the story, which both sides kind of misrepresented the issue. But the issue is genuine, and it's Netflix recently decided not to allow people to subscribe to Netflix in the Apple store because Apple takes 30% in the first year and then 15% per year thereafter. Some say that's what we call rent seeking, where you get money for adding no value. Apple says, well, we add a lot of value. That app store helped make Spotify what it is today. What they kind of leave out of the equation is Apple competes with Apple Music and charges, oddly enough, 30% less for Apple Music subscriptions through the app store. Works out nicely that way, doesn't it? So you saw perhaps that former Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke has announced his run for presidency in 2020. Interesting, because I think if he runs, he will be the first candidate for president that's a member of former member of a hacking group. not the worst hacking group ever. They're called the Cult of the Dead Cow, or CODCOW, something like that. The Cult of the Dead Cow was a kind of a hacktivist group in the 90s. I haven't heard from them in a while. They're still around, I guess. In fact, there's a great picture of Beto from that era where he's with his punk band. According to Reuters, there's no indication that O'Rourke ever engaged in the edgiest sort of hacking activity, like breaking into computers or writing code that enabled others to do so. On the other hand, I don't know if it's a bad thing to have. I mean, we've always said we should have people in office who know something about technology. Clearly, Beto does. Facebook was out for a whole day. WhatsApp and Instagram, too, for a whole day. Did you go through withdrawal? Did you suffer? Was it a terrible, terrible loss? Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. They say it wasn't hacking. We just misconfigured server. Boy. There's a competitor to Facebook's Messenger. I don't know if you're familiar with it, called Telegram. Do you know that? Very popular among certain groups. Created by a Russian fellow, Pavel Durov, who many likened to the Mark Zuckerberg of Russia. He's certainly good at promotion. He sent out a message to his Telegram channel saying, since Facebook Messenger has been down today, we've seen 3 million new users sign up to Telegram. Whether that's true or not, it's good publicity, right? Good. Love that. 3 million new subscribers. Of course, the tragedy in Christchurch, New Zealand, and that's not really a story for this show, except that I think it is the first time a mass murderer used Facebook Live to stream his crime, and that's pretty appalling. You can't blame Facebook, I don't think. Any live platform that offers that kind of live could have been used, YouTube too, or Twitch or Mixer or any other. But it was Facebook. And now there's a big effort afoot all over the internet to keep copies of that video from getting distributed because they're around. And I haven't seen them, and I hope you've never seen them. But apparently they're pretty horrible. Mark Zuckerberg is pivoting, as we talked about last week. They want to focus on a privacy first Facebook, which incidentally would make it much harder to police that kind of live stream, right? But at least it wouldn't be public. Two of Mark's closest allies have quit Facebook this week, apparently as a result of this, including Chris Cox, who has been with Facebook for a very, very long time, and he designed the news feed when it first started and was considered to be a strong right hand to Mark Zuckerberg. And apparently he left, according to the New York Times, because he didn't want to go private. He didn't like that new idea for Facebook. Also, the Facebook executive put in charge of WhatsApp when the founders of WhatsApp left a few months ago. He quit too. It's a rocky time for Facebook. We are going to go to your calls in just a second. Kim Schaffer is here. She's answering the phone. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. I'd love to hear from you. Hello, Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. Did you have a good week?
I did. Yeah, but this weekend's even better.
Oh.
Well, because it's beautiful.
Look it's at a this gorgeous. Weather. It's
we
a
were
gorgeous.
Finally, I walked out of the house on, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday and went, yeah. Wow. This is the first time I've been outside in 3 months.
No, we shouldn't rub it in because we still have people digging out from the bomb cyclone.
Oh, is that
and
what
the
it
rest
is?
Of the bomb cyclone in the rest of the country?
It's not
I guess
the polar vortex.
It's the no, bomb it's cyclone. A bomb cyclone. You know, I think meteorologists are trying to spiff up their
atmospheric river. I mean,
yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
hear that in my childhood.
No,
or the
I think
the bomb vortex.
I think they're really trying to make it a more sexy science.
Guess so.
With the bomb vortex. So I hope you survived the bomb cyclone, everybody. And now I guess what it is you just have ice. Lots of ice.
Ice melting
everywhere.
Ice.
Melt on ice. Ugh. Mm. So anyway, we're glad you're all here.
Yeah.
And Kim, Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
The amazing Kimmy Schaefer. Who should I start with on the show?
Bill in LA wants to know if you have any suggestions for a QR code generator to replace one that I guess Google's discontinuing.
Oh man!
Like any day, I don't know.
Come
if you
on,
know anything
Google.
About that, but
that's the Google way, isn't
the
it?
The Google way, yes. Yeah, isn't Google Plus going away any day now?
Yeah, basically, it's gone. Anybody who
is
still
is it
on
gone?
It, well, it isn't, but. Anybody who wanted to use it is probably left by now.
All right.
Hello, Bill. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's good to speak with you today. So here's the story real fast. Google had or has an awesome QR code generator product. It's called it's over at goo.gl, and you can use it when you log in with a Google account.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, and it's great, and it worked, and there was no problems with the QR codes generated. They were clean without adware or spyware or anything like that. They worked. Unfortunately, Google will scrap that product, goo.gl, literally in a few days. Now, they say that that people who want this product or service should go to bit.ly or ow.ly. I've never gone to those products myself. And before I do, I'd like to hear your take on all this and if you have any QR code generators that you like.
So, yeah, there are lots of them, but you make a good point. You don't, you know, you some of them probably have advertising, and almost all of them will link through their own yep. site, which means you're sending traffic to their site, and that's yep. their benefit. They often will show ads at that point. So it's interesting. Google mentions Bit.ly and Owly. These are both well-known QR code shortener sites. Actually, they're really more link shortener sites than anything else. Owly is Hootsuite's site, and I use Bit.ly. I've used it for years. In fact, Bit.ly is probably the first and longest running kind of URL shortener.
Okay.
And I highly recommend it. They have a free version, which I use. In fact, you're allowed to create, and this might not be a bad idea, create a domain name that's yours for your own. So with Google, you use goo.gl/, and then you'd have a number or, you know, a sequence of inscrutable letters that would then expand out. I registered a domain called leo.ist or leoist, and I use that as my domain shortener through Bit.ly. And so if you go to, for instance, I have, I use it in my email, leo.ist/key is how I sign my email so you can get my PGP key. And it just goes straight to the site. There's no pausing at the Bit.ly page to, you know, visits, ad links, or anything like that. Bit.ly makes its money on a paid version of the site. Now, I'd never tried a QR code generator by Bit.ly, but if Google recommends it, I think it's probably safe. So I'm very happy with Bit.ly. Owly comes, as I said, from Hootsuite, which is a commercial program that allows people to post to social media on schedule. A lot of companies, we've used Hootsuite for a long time. A lot of companies use Hootsuite to do that. So, but I'd be perfectly comfortable with Bit.ly. I had no problem using Bit.ly. I like Bit.ly, in fact. So, in fact, use it myself. And all my emails are signed with a Bit.ly link because it's nice and short. Vinny, Hawthorne, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Vinny.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm thanks for taking my call. I'm getting over a little cold I got here, buddy.
I'm sorry. I hope you feel better.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's getting there. You know, I said that kind of. I'm called. Thanks for everything you do, because I'm not too much of a geek, but I take your advice on almost these, especially TVs and cell phones. And I finally graduated from an S4, Galaxy S4, to the 10 Plus.
Oh, congratulations. That's a big jump. That's a 6-year jump.
Oh, my God. I kept saying, all my friends were telling me, Vinny.
Don't let peer pressure force you to get rid of a phone you like.
Yeah, well, nothing's really wrong with the S4, but
it is a little.
I wanted to wait for the real top of the line one, and I waited.
Do you like it? Did you get your 10 Plus?
I love it. Yeah,
isn't it
I love
sweet?
It. I'm talking to you on it right now.
Oh, it sounds good. Easily the best smartphone Samsung's ever made, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I waited for it. I'm so glad I did. I got a good tax return, so
nice.
I did it myself.
Nice. You got you that know? Refund. You spent it on a nice phone for yourself. I'll tell you the two things I'm not crazy about. One is, and I don't know if you've noticed this, I had to put it in a case because I kept triggering things by holding it. The edge goes all the way. The screen goes so far to the edge that you could keep tapping it by accident. So I got just a little case, little plastic case, and that gives me a little more edge room, and so I don't trigger the edge. And the other is the fingerprint reader takes a little getting used to. It's not instant, but it's fine.
I'm having no problem.
It works.
I got the case too.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah, and it's the best screen I've ever seen. It's gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful screen.
Yeah.
Hey, oh my God.
It's very snappy, very fast. I immediately went out and got Action Launcher, which is a third-party user interface, because I don't mind the Samsung One, the new One interface, but I like Action Launcher a little bit better. It gives me a lot of nice features. But that's the beauty of Android. And the other reason, the real reason to upgrade that you did the right thing is for security, because the S4 wasn't getting patches anymore. And this is up to date. So congratulations.
I love it, Leo. I've been meaning to, you know, call up, and I never got through, so I figured, let me try it now. I got the new phone, and
it worked. You know, Not only that, you get through easier.
Yeah, I got the plasma 50-inch still working good, the Viera.
Good man, Vinny. Feel better soon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Good man. Yeah, I'm glad to. I think this is an excellent, and actually made me really nervous. I just got the case yesterday. It made me really nervous. I carried it all the way around through Orange County and everything without a case. And the thing is slippery. It's like carrying a bar of soap. I mean, it's that slippery. There's no, because this is, I got the ceramic back. There's no, nothing. Does it save URL shortcuts? Yeah, as far as I know, this is a URL shortcut right here. What I like about Action Launcher, a couple of things. One are these side launchers. So that's all the apps. I turned off the slide up app thing. I don't want that. I have it for Google Assistant, right? This I like, which is the quick launch. So I put all my audio, the stuff I listen to, podcasts and Audible books and all that stuff, music. I put that all right there so I can quickly access it. Samsung has this little sidebar thing, which is nice. So you can have whatever you want to have in that sidebar, which is really great. What else? And then instead of having a lot of icons, I use widgets. This is one of the things I really like about Android is the big widgets. So this is a widget. And then Action Launcher lets you make any icon also be a folder. So these are the apps I use the most. Like there's Pokemon Go. But if I hit it, it just launches Pokemon Go. But if I swipe down, that's actually the game folder. So on the front screen, without clutter, I have all my stuff. There's all the Google apps. So there's all the food apps. Here's the content creation apps. So isn't that nice? There's all the travel apps. So this is the most used travel app, of course, is Google Maps. So if I tap it, I get Google Maps. But if I swipe down, I get all the other stuff, too. So for me, that's nice. URL shortcuts. Well, I'm not sure what that means. There is a new Nova Launcher out and a new beta out. So, but I gave up on Nova Launcher, not because I dislike it, but I just like Action Launcher better. And it's very reliable, which is nice. And the other nice thing, of course, with both Action Launcher and Nova Launcher, you can lock the desktop so that you can't accidentally slide things or, you know, icons around. And both feature a very nice feature, which is you can back up your settings and move it to a new phone very easily. So you save a copy of your settings. That's a very nice feature. So I'm a fan of, let me turn down the screen a little bit, it's too bright. I'm a big fan of Action Launcher. Samsung has some really nice features in the new phone. I think it's a beautiful phone. I'm very happy with it. Nova Launcher's fine. Keith says, do you trigger that up by accident? No. No, so you have to really kind of deliberately do the swipe. People like the Microsoft Launcher, don't they? Yeah. I don't know how I did that. So Bitly, even with a free account, if you'd have to look in the advanced features of Bitly, lets you create a domain, have a domain name that you've registered. I have one at Hover, Leoist. And you can, with Bitly, then say all the shortened links, instead of being bit.ly/something, are leo.ist/something, which I think is very nice. Reverend Dan Quince in the chat room has filled me in. I guess Google is deprecating their shortener, goog.gl, for public use. The QR code generator is still there. But as I said, Bitly is a great shortener, and I highly recommend it. I don't know if they do QR codes or not, but it's a great shortener. And then somebody in the chat room mentioned that there is an open source QR code shortener that you can use on Mac and Linux. That is easily installed and downloaded, but it's command line called QR encode, a Python script called QR encode. So then you don't, you know, you create your own URL shortener and you don't even need to send it through anybody. So there's a couple of answers for you. I guess Google's keeping I gather from Reverend Dan Quince that Google is keeping their QR code generator, just getting rid of their URL shortener. Time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! Joins us every week, the home theater geek, to talk about big screen TVs and surround sound and so forth. We want to get that aspect ratio thing cleared up a little bit. We talked about that last week.
We did, and I wanted to make a slight clarification. We were talking
about... It's confusing
about-
as heck.
It is. Well, it doesn't have to be. I mean, aspect ratio is actually very simple. It's simply the relationship between the image's width to its height.
Right.
So if you're looking at an image, it could be a photo or it could be a TV or a movie. The image has a width and a height. And if the height and the width are exactly the same, then the aspect ratio is called 1:1. It looks like a square. It is a square.
Yeah.
If it's twice as wide as it is tall, then it's 2:1. So that's really not terribly difficult. We were talking about, though, aspect ratios in IMAX. And I mentioned that IMAX has a little bit different aspect ratio than most commercial cinemas. And I mentioned that aspect ratio was 1.9:1, almost 2:1. Whereas most theaters and most movies have an aspect ratio of 2.35:1. So it's even wider. And somebody in the chat room said, wait a second. I thought IMAX had an aspect ratio of 1.43:1. So much squarer, much taller than most movie images. And that's true for IMAX film. So IMAX movies that are shot on IMAX 70mm film do in fact have that 1.43:1 aspect ratio, very tall. And that was the original point of IMAX. You walk into an IMAX theater, you see the screen that's 8 stories tall. It's huge, very immersive. But digital IMAX went to an aspect ratio of 1.9:1. And that is probably, I think it's the much more common form of IMAX now, which some people call LIMAX because they, oh, we want the 1.43. We want the really tall one. Well, that you can get that if something was shot on film. But if it's shot on digital, like a digital Arri Alexa IMAX camera, it's going to be 1.9:1. So I just wanted to make that clear. It's a little bit of a strange thing in the world of IMAX and commercial movie theaters because you're not quite sure what you're getting unless you really kind of dig into it.
And this, my friends, is why we call him the home theater geek. He is a bit of a geek. You buy a TV, though, the so-called widescreen TVs or the widescreen computers, that's six. Those are 16 by 9, right?
16 by 9 or 1.78:1. So not quite twice as wide as it is tall.
And that's why you have black bars when you...
Correct.
If you watch a movie that was shot at 2.35:1,
yep,
you'll have black
you'll
bars
see
top
black
and
bars
bottom
across the top and bottom. Yeah. Exactly, those are called letterbox bars, and a lot of people are really bothered by them. They said the thinking basically is, hey, wait a minute, I bought this TV that's this size and this shape. And now I have black bars on the top and bottom. I'm wasting pixels.
Well, what was 16:9? Why did they make the TV 16:9?
Well, they wanted to make it widescreen, and they wanted to make it easy to move from the previous standard definition TV, which was 4:3.
Right.
Okay.
Oh, I get it. So they multiplied by 4 in each dimension.
Exactly. Well, they squared each dimension.
Squared, I should say. Yeah, yeah. Four squared by 3 squared. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, so that becomes 16:9. That makes it easy to scale things if necessary.
Okay.
But the problem is that people get this nice new 16:9 TV, and they watch a movie, and they see these black letterbox bars, and they say, wait a minute, I want to see the whole thing. So they go into the TV's menu, and they pick one of the Zoom modes.
No, don't do that.
Because what that does is it does one of two things. It either stretches the whole image and crops off the right and left.
Right.
You know, so you don't see the whole picture, or it stretches vertically. It stretches the image vertically to fill the screen, but then circles look like ovals.
Right.
And people look weird.
Actually, this would be a good time to go through those various settings. Because I think when people get their TV and they go through the picture size settings.
Yes.
I've got on this screen full.
Yep.
Theater wide 1, theater wide 2, theater wide 3, natural and... And then on other TVs, I don't know why. This is a very
old
TV.
They're all called different. They all have different
you get name. What is the best?
The best is what is typically called dot by dot or pure pixel. It has a variety of names. But basically, you want this picture size to be whatever pixel is coming in from the source device in the signal, you want that to be 1 pixel on the screen.
In other words, don't scale it.
Don't scale it.
Have it 1:1. The digital input should be 1:1 on the screen.
Exactly.
But you're going to get black bars on some content because,
correct.
But that's most better movies than distorting it.
Correct. Correct.
Sometimes it's native, full pixel.
Yeah, I think a full pixel is another name for it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Native is another one. Exactly. You want one of those picture size settings, not Zoom or theater or whatever the
picture. And to further confuse things, there are shows shot on now because of TV screens, 16:9.
That's right. That's right.
A lot of TV shows, like if you watch HBO, those will be 16:9.
Right. But those are TV shows.
They're shot for a TV, not a movie screen. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So if you have it on natural or full pixel,
yep,
those will fill the screen. Movies won't.
Correct.
And it's, sometimes you'll get like Lawrence of Arabia. You'll get a Cinerama that is really widescreen.
Yeah, really wide with really big black bars on the top and bottom of the picture. That's why people buy projectors and screens that are 2.35:1.
Oh, that's for
your
home theater.
So that when they watch movies, that's a real home theater.
Yeah.
So that then when they watch movies, it fills the screen.
But then what happens when they watch an HBO show and it's 16:9?
Then you have black bars on the
sides.
You have what are called window bars. letterbox bars or window box bars.
In other words, there's no screen that's the size of everything you're going to watch. They're all different aspect ratios.
No, exactly.
See, it's not that complicated. Scott Wilkinson, home theater geek. That's why we call him that. And he joins us every week to talk high-tech AV. And it's a lot of fun. Thank you, Scott. We'll see you next week.
You betcha.
More of your calls coming up in just a bit. If you haven't been bewildered by this aspect ratio, that's the beauty of radio. I'm 0 to 0. 0 by 0.
That's right.
Don't have to worry about stretching, filling, or zooming me. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see here. Let's
by the way,
the screen. Yes, sir.
I will not be here next week.
Not here next week. Alex is now nodding.
I hope somebody notes that down.
Somebody is noting that.
I'm actually playing a Balkan wedding.
Oh, fun.
In Borrego Springs, which is like a 3.5-hour drive from my house.
And what instrument do you play at a Balkan wedding?
Well, Balkan music is very interesting. I play a euphonium, which is basically a tenor tuba. It's a small tuba.
Yeah.
And in the Balkans, in Serbia, in Bulgaria, they have a very interesting tradition of brass band music.
Oh.
So the brass band consists of several trumpets, several euphonia, at least one tuba, and some percussion. And the music is all dance music. In Serbia and Bulgaria, places like that, Romania, Macedonia, they have this folk dancing tradition. And they've got this music that's very wild and woolly and very often in really odd time signatures. You know, normally things are in 4-4, 1-2, 3-4.
Is it kind of more like klezmer maybe a little bit?
It's related to klezmer, yes.
Yeah.
Except klezmer is typically not in these odd times.
Yeah.
So
fun.
Normally, it's going to be really fun. And it's going to be out in the desert in Borrego Springs, which is the location of what's called the California Super Bloom.
Ooh, what is that?
It's wildflower season.
Oh, fun. And we saw a ton of monarch butterflies this weekend in Orange County.
Too.
Yeah,
we did
too. Well, we were down your way. Yeah.
I was at the gym and on the treadmill and out the window, and all these butterflies
were
going by.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyway, because of all the rain we've had this year, the California wildflowers in Anza Borrego and areas like that, sort of northeast San Diego County. It's called the Super Bloom, and there's apparently the wildflowers are really amazing.
So nice.
I'm going to go early and go take some photos and stuff like that and then do this.
That's awesome. I'm glad you're doing that. Yeah, so we'll miss you, but
really
we'll make a note that Scotty will not be here.
I'm afraid so.
And can you go ahead? You got another minute and a half, but I just want to ask if you can stick around for the top.
Yep.
Okay.
Happy to.
All yours.
Thank you. Key 43, going to get your drove on. I'm not sure I know what that means. I'm going to get my drive on. I'm going to have to drive 3.5 hours to get there. And Mike, I say, Mike, yeah, the food will be interesting, undoubtedly. That should be quite fun. I'm really looking forward to it. Scooter X, yes, seeing people watch TV zoomed in is awful. It sure is. It's just so horrible. Now, speaking of which, I want to mention, I didn't get a chance to do it on the air, but I want to mention there is another more subtle problem in this area of scaling and zooming, and that is called overscan. And that's a leftover from the days of analog TV. We don't need it anymore, but a lot of TVs still do it. And what they do is they expand the picture slightly. They move it from being just pixel or full pixel or natural, native, whatever it's called, one-to-one pixel mapping, and they expand it slightly. And that causes a loss of resolution and all kinds of things. So you really want to go in there and look for just pixel or natural or full pixel or whatever it's called.
We'll talk to you at the top of the hour.
You betcha.
Thank you, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. We're going to record calls after the show today because I'm going on vacation next month, and we like to have fresh content for you, even if I'm not here. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. If you want to call, sometimes it's a little easier to get through after 2 Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, when the show goes off the air. I will continue to answer calls for another hour or two. So just make a note of that. If it's hard to get through now, that'd be a great time to call. 8888-ASK-LEO. And I should mention that I'll be gone in the first part of the month, but I'm going to be gone for 2 weekends, which means it's a great opportunity for us to bring in Rich DeMuro again from KTLA. So he'll be here April 13th and 14th doing the show. Thank you, Rich. So if you're Rich DeMuro fans, and I know you are, April 13th and 14th, he'll be on the Tech Guy show. David on the line from Brooklyn. Hi, David. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
Hey, Leo. I have a question. I want to go ahead and try something, get something, and I want to know if you think I'll be disappointed.
Okay.
I'm interested in getting a portable music player, and I was reading online that you can use an old cell phone for that. Well,
sure.
I don't have an old cell phone, but I was looking on online, and it looks like one can get one of these prepaid cell phones for about $30.
Yeah.
About the same cost, maybe even less expensive than a lot of music players.
That's exactly right, yeah.
It seems to come with enough memory and, you know, Bluetooth and wireless, a Wi-Fi and a little plug-in for the speaker if need be. Am I going to be disappointed if I get that?
I don't think so. A couple of things to keep in mind. You mentioned one, which is you need enough storage on the phone. Some inexpensive phones don't have much storage, 16 gigs or the like. And so keep that in mind, although the first iPod was only a gigabyte, so, you know, it's not, it may be enough for you, but just keep that in mind. You'd want something with 64 gigs or more, or even better, the ability to put an SD card in, because that means you could put all your music on an SD card and then pop it into the phone. And also, you want to make sure that the phone will continue to work even if it has no SIM card. And most phones, that's not a problem. Because you're not going to buy a SIM card, you're not going to buy connectivity. You're just going to use it as a portable player, kind of like Apple still sells, the iPhone, kind of without the phone. That's their last iPod. They still sell, which is basically an iPhone without a phone, and that works just fine. The other thing to keep in mind is some smartphones have better sound than others. You want something with a good digital to analog converter. The LG phones are known to sound very, very good. So if you can get a used LG phone or an older LG phone, that would be a good choice. But none of them are bad. It's just some are better than others. iPhones particularly sound good as well.
How could I figure out what the digital audio converter that
you DAC just do a search for the phone you're thinking about buying. If you do that and DAC, there are audiophiles out there who will have something to say about every DAC in use. So they'll say, don't get that because it sounds terrible, or, oh, that's a good one, or that kind of thing. LG's known to be good. That's the only thing I know particularly. And, that's only if you really have golden ears and you really want to, get the best possible sound.
Yeah, it's really something to take to the gym in case I lose it, forget it, or whatever.
Perfect. Perfect, then. $30, great deal.
Awesome. And it does have a little slot for an SD card.
So, that's the best way, because then you don't care how much storage there is on the phone. You only put it on the SD card.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've never had an Android before. I've been an iPhone guy. So just download an audio player. Any recommendations there for software? Now,
they'll all come with something to play audio, because that's something very common on Android devices. If they don't, Double Twist is a very good Android audio player. And what you'll notice is that Double Twist will look in the right folder on your SD card, but you have to make sure. You can't just put the music on there. Usually it's a folder called music. But what I would suggest doing is, before you copy a lot of music over, just put on whatever player you're going to use, open it up, say, I want to store the music on the SD card, and see what folder it creates, and that's the folder you're going to put your music in. Usually it's a folder. It's kind of, it's not at the top level in the SD card, or might be, I don't know. It depends on the phone. Often it's not. It's kind of deeper down. It's like Android data, music, something like that. So you might have to do a little browsing around to figure out exactly where to put it. But once you figure that out, full speed ahead.
Awesome. Anything else I should know?
No, I think that's a great... Which phone is it?
The one I was looking at was an Alcatel, the Alcatel TCL-LX. It's sold by Simple Mobile and some other people.
Yeah, so I don't know what Alcatel's DACs are like. Those are very cheap phones. In fact, they usually only have 8 gigs of storage, so it's good it has an SD card slot in that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's yeah. the deal.
There. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. You know what? You're not going to notice a difference.
Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. All right, enjoy. What a great idea. Yeah, I was going to recommend there are standalone, people still make iPod-like devices. They're standalone players, and I have in the past recommended, and I use myself, players from a company called Fio, F-I-I-O, and they're basically the last iPod maker, and they're pretty nice. You can get a variety of different sizes and shapes, and the thing about them is they have very good headphone amplifiers and very good digital to analog converters. So they're kind of designed for audiophiles. But if all you want to do is listen to it in the gym, I think that's a clever way to do that. Tim Elliott says he uses a ZTE phone. He got it for $8 from Best Buy. Prepaid AT&T phone. He uses it all the time to play music from Google Music. That's the other thing is you may want to subscribe to Spotify or Google Music or one of the music stores, and then you can just stream it. As long as you got Wi-Fi, you can stream it. Frank in Van Nuys, are you there? Oh, there's Frank. Frank, are you there?
Yes, I am finally. Thank you.
Oh, good. It was not me. It was you. What can I do for you, Frank?
Yes. All right. I bought an XBR Sony TV, XBR.
Very nice.
Yeah. 800E.
Yes.
And about 3 weeks after the store guarantee was up, I had started having problems with the tuner.
Inevitably.
If I wanted to go from 2 to 4, it would go from 2 to 69,
Oy.
Which is something I hadn't programmed in.
Yeah.
And then I'd push go back, and it would turn to black. It wouldn't stay. It didn't go in a progressive way, you know, like 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11. It would go 2, 4, 36, 18.
Have you called Sony just to see what they say? The other choice, of course, is you don't have to use a built-in tuner. You can have, get a TiVo or a Channel Master or some other external tuner box, plug that into the HDMI port, and just change that. As long as the panel still works. That's another option. But I'd call Sony. That seems like something they could fix. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah. All right. Scott Wilkinson, unless you have something to add to that, I'll let you continue.
No, that's about what I would have said.
Yeah, just get your own tuner or call Sony.
By the way, when are you... other than April 13, 14.
We're going to record ahead of time for the week before that.
April 6, 7?
Yeah.
Excellent, because I actually won't be here on April 6th, but I'd be happy to pre-record.
Yeah. I think next week we're thinking to pre-record. Well, you won't have to do – you can't do next week, but we could do it.
I can't.
Let's see. We were thinking of pre-recording on March – go ahead.
Yeah, there's a following week before you're gone.
Yeah, let's do March 30th for you.
Yeah.
So perfect. I'll put you in for March 30th.
Excellent.
Good. Have at it.
Okie doke. Thank you. Let's see. So I've been talking with Key 43 about he's got some VHS-C tapes that he wants to put into his computer, digitize. And you can do that as long as you have the camcorder that you recorded them on or some other playback device. The camcorder that Keith has has only a composite output, which is not going to be very good. And digitizing that, I mean, you basically go to Google and type in VHS to digital or something like that. And you'll see a bunch, and maybe go to Amazon and try that. You'll see a bunch of products in the $50 to $70, $80 range. That do exactly that, that take the output from the camcorder, which includes the composite video and audio, which I believe in Keith's case is mono. There's only one channel. You connect those to these little devices, and then those devices plug into the USB port on your computer, and send digital information into your computer, and boom, you've got it done. The quality's not going to be very good, but there's probably not much you can do about that. My preference would probably, depending on how valuable these are, I mean, if they're like, you know, super valuable home movies and you want them to be the best possible quality, I would probably seek out a professional service to do it. Now, unless you have hundreds of them, in which case, you know, it's going to cost you, it's going to be prohibitively expensive. And in that case, then sure, take the time, do it yourself. But I think a professional service would give you the best possible outcome, the best possible quality. So, yes, exactly. You want the best quality you can pull off the tape, depending on how many do you have. You know, if you've got a few, I'd take them to a professional service. And in LA, anyway, there's a million of them. But, you know, and if you're out in the boonies someplace, then maybe not. But in any event, that's what I would recommend. And if you want to do it yourself, you're going to need to get one of these analog to digital converters. Oh, and Scooter X is making a good point here that the OTA network channels are moving their frequencies soon, which is a very interesting thing. I didn't really even know that until I think it was last night. I was watching Stephen Colbert and this little banner came in across the bottom of the screen that said CBS is changing its frequency. If you get your TV over the air with an over the air antenna, you're going to have to rescan your TV. And that was the first I'd heard of it. So that was only yesterday. So let's see. By law, many TV stations are moving to new frequencies between now and 2020. I guess that's to free up spectrum space for 5G, maybe. I'm guessing there, but what you'll have to do if you get your TV, your local TV anyway, over the air with an antenna, you're going to have to go into your TV's menu and hit rescan, and that will then scan all the frequencies and find all of your broadcast channels, which would typically include CBS, NBC, ABC, Fox, CW, and probably some others as well. Why they are doing that, maybe somebody here knows. If you know in the chat room, let's hear about it. Hey, Sybil, LLAP, good to see you as always. Let's see. yep, rescan the channel, Scooter X. That's exactly right. Davey Dam asks, so what is the best option for analog output to capture lossless digital? I assume you mean analog audio. And basically, it's the same thing we were just talking about, is you've got to somehow convert it to digital. And capture lossless digital. I mean, you can certainly capture lossless digital, but it's a little bit weird to think about it in those terms, because analog is lossless in a sense. You can basically capture anything losslessly, that is using an audio codec that is lossless, not MP3. But rather WAV, W-A-V, or AIFF, which is the Apple format, that does not apply any data compression. So, you know, iTunes will do that. Well, I guess maybe iTunes won't. I'm thinking about importing CDs, which are already digital. But if you've got analog, depending on the specs of the analog device, you, again, want to connect it to an analog-to-digital converter that simply just converts the analog signal into digital and then send that into the computer. And most analog to digital converters, all of them, I'm sure, have at least a setting, if that's not the only thing they do, just simply digitize it and not apply data compression. That's the main thing, is to not apply data compression. You can do that later. Once it's digital, you can then say, okay, now I want a version of it that is 10 times smaller, 1/10 the size of the uncompressed lossless digital to put on your phone or whatever. And iTunes will do that easily. That's or any audio program basically will do that, will convert a uncompressed to compressed. But when you're capturing it, when you're capturing the analog audio into digital, you want to definitely not apply data compression. It'll be a relatively large file size, nothing compared to video, but still larger than MP3 by a factor of 10. Still, that, you know, for audio, that's not that bad. And you want to get the best possible connection you can from the analog device to the analog to digital converter. And if you have a device, an analog device, a playback device that has XLR outputs, you want to use those if you can, because that's going to be a much better quality than that's also called balanced. And you want to do that instead of something called unbalanced. And if you can. Now, if your device doesn't have that, well, use unbalanced and go for it. Now, use the highest, well, not necessarily the highest specs you can, but that's about it.
Hey, thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure.
See you in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.
Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computer, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got smartphones. We got your smart watches, augmented reality, virtual reality, real reality, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. Well, interesting. Thank you to our chat room for finding something that might be applicable to our last caller. Remember his channel changer, his tuner wasn't working right and would jump around a little bit. What I should have said, there's a distinction, a difference between the channels that you get through your cable or your satellite box and the channels you get over the air. And I didn't ask him if these were over the air channels. If they are, then there is something going on that might affect how your channels work. I didn't know this, but the FCC is asking some local stations in some cities to change their frequencies. What? This is going to be going on between now and next July, 2020, not this July, a year from now. People who watch free, now this is only for people who watch over-the-air television. If you use an antenna, you're going to need to rescan your TV set each time a station moves if you want to receive those local stations. So it's the same thing you do when you got your TV and you got it out of the box. And the first thing that you do on the TV is you scan. You're going through the frequencies looking for channels, because not every channel has a station on it. So it would look through it and it would create a channel guide based on the stations you could receive locally. You know, 2, 3, 5, 9, whatever they are. So you may have to do that again if you notice that you're having trouble getting certain stations. And I don't know if that's related to our last call. Maybe it is Frank's problem. And if it is, a rescan is indicated. And you may, and I mention this because you may have to do this yourself if you're watching over-the-air television. Won't affect anybody on cable or satellite. They're not moving. It's only the over-the-air TVs. And it's not every channel. The actual channel number won't change. The TV will rescan and say, oh, channel 4 is now at 103.9 megahertz instead of 103.7 or whatever that is. So I didn't realize it was doing this. I guess the FCC is trying to make room once again for digital frequencies. So they're asking TV stations to move. I think nowadays the presumption is that most people actually don't watch over-the-air TV, that they're either using cable or satellite or internet nowadays. I just saw a study that said millennials watch more Netflix than they do regular TV. That's no surprise. If you have a kid under the age of 25, you know that's true. And I guess millennials, what is millennials go now through their early 30s, right? I was talking to a 31-year-old. She said, I'm a millennial. I said, you're a millennial? She said, yeah. I came of age. I was born in 1988, came of age in the internet era. I guess that's true, isn't it? Yeah. So you're a millennial. That's the definition. So millennials, people who are internet native, are more and more increasingly watching TV just via the internet. YouTube is huge, right, among the younger set. 8888 Ask Leo. Now let's try Asian in Santa Ana. I don't know if it's our phones or Asian. I hear you now. Hi, Asian.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. What can I do for you today?
Good. So I have a quick question. So my girlfriend, she just bought the Ender 3 3D printer.
Okay.
To try to make her own personal cookie cutters. We're having trouble printing it. It says we try uploading it to printf on the printer, but nothing happens. Do you know what the issue is?
Well, that's a little specific for me. I don't, off the top of my head. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in this. Is the printer seeing it, or is it doing the wrong thing, or not doing anything at all?
It just doesn't see it.
We
tried looking online, and it says for this printer, every single thing that we read says print from SD. So we're not sure why ours says print from TF. I don't really know what the difference is.
Huh. Well, maybe there you go. TF. Is that what is that?
Oh, I have no idea.
Print from TF. Are you using TensorFlow? Is that what you're using?
To be honest, no. What's the
program you're using to make the 3D?
That's the other thing. We tried looking online for any free programs, but haven't gotten any luck with any of them.
Yeah. So when you're doing 3D printing, there's a couple of things to do. I think what you really do is you don't need to create your own 3D printing files. You can go online. There are really excellent available, and I'm sure many cookie cutter choices available for you online. Let's see. What is the? I'm trying to remember the 3D printing site that's so popular. Oh, it escapes me now. It's funny because we used to talk a lot about 3D printing, and it's all kind of ancient history now. It sounds like a great use for 3D printing to make cookie cutters. What does she want to make?
Yeah, since she's starting her own little baking business from home.
She wants little R2-D2 molds and things like that?
She wants to do everything because we've been buying quite a few cookie cutters, and at some point it's just be more affordable to print our own.
Yeah. So Thingiverse was the thing I was trying to remember. Thingiverse.com, Thingiverse.com. And I just looked at cookie cutters on Thingiverse. There's Superman. There's Batman. There's Peppa Pig. There's hundreds of cookie cutter designs. And the nice thing about that is you don't have to design them. You could just print them out. I'm sure they'd have a format that would work for your printer. And then if you just, you found one you really like, it'd be easy enough to modify it as well. There's, goodness gracious, there's all kinds. Timmy Time Sheep. There's Cartman from South Park. There's a Dachshund, Owl, Pony, My Little Pony Cookie Cutter, Triceratops, Batman, Stormtrooper Cookie Cutter. These are all 3D printable. This is from Thingiverse. Really a great resource. If you have a 3D printer, that's a great place to go. The Ender 3 is a fairly inexpensive 3D printer. I don't know what kind of support they offer. But Thingiverse is definitely... TF is an old style. It's a type of SD card for 3D printers. So it's just a specific kind of SD card. It might be that it can't see the SD card. So it might be a format issue. But go to Thingiverse, download something from Thingiverse, put it on your TF card, and see if that works. I think people use TF and SD interchangeably nowadays. So I'm sure that that's the old way, old style. Maybe you have an older Ender 3. Somebody says, I want a Datsun cookie cutter. Panda. Oh, here's a middle finger cookie cutter. Darth Vader. Here are cookies that say, eat me. Cheshire Cat. How about a Facebook thumbs up? A like button. The Golden Snitch. I would guess that anything that you could think of, you could find on Thingiverse and make a 3D print out of it. This is really cool. Husky, unicorn, mustache cookies, 8-bit Pac-Man cookie cutter. 8888 Ask Leo. This is a perfect use, I think, for 3D printers, actually. 888-827-5536. That's the number if you want to call, and maybe you have a suggestion for the Ender 3. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, TF card. Boy, that's been a long time. Now, of course, I remember. They used to call them TF cards. Wow. That must be a very old manual. 8888-ASK-LEO. Let's talk. Our show today brought to you by DigitalOcean. What a cool company that makes a product that is just changing the world. DigitalOcean, D-O, is the simplest cloud platform. If you're a developer, if you're a team, if you're like me, just somebody who likes to play with internet technologies, I love DigitalOcean. Basically, it's taken the old idea of having a host, a web host, a server host, and making it simple, fast, and easy. You can have multiple servers running any number of programs and projects. They're very affordable. It's easy to spin them up and spin them down as you need them. It's great for somebody who's got an idea for a startup and you want to put a minimal viable product online so that investors could see it. It's great for me. I'm trying to learn technologies like Node.js. I want to do portable web apps. It's great for anybody, even businesses that have a need for servers. SSD-based virtual machines that you could set up in less than a minute. In fact, I'm going to do that right now. This is my DigitalOcean page. And I'm going to set up what they call a droplet in the ocean. So I'm just going to walk you through this so you can see how easy it is. In the old days, I would call a server company. I'd say, hey, can you set an Ubuntu server up for me? And they'd say 5 days later, oh, yeah, it's ready. And then I'd have to go and install the software. This is so much easier. Choose your operating system, Ubuntu, FreeBSD, Fedora, Debian, CentOS. Or you could choose a container distribution. They support Kubernetes. They support Docker. They also have a marketplace for one-button images. So these are all things I could set up very quickly, a LAMP stack or GitLab or Node.js, MySQL. Let's say I want to learn Node.js. I want to do some Node.js programming. I want to make a portable web app. So I'm going to choose Node.js. I could choose the plan. General purpose, CPU optimized, we'll choose a starter plan, and I'm going to turn the knob all the way down to $5 a month. That's plenty for me. And as you grow, you can expand it, you can add more CPUs, you can add more. But I mean, this is pretty good. You get a gigabyte of RAM, you get a 25 gig SSD, these are enterprise grade, super fast, and I get a terabyte of transfer a month. Do you want backups for $1 a month? You can add a backup. Block storage if you need it. I like to choose San Francisco, but you can get servers in New York, San Francisco, Amsterdam, Singapore, London, Frankfurt, Toronto, and Bangalore. So there's a server near you. I always use my SSH key for login. There it is. I can name it. Let's call it Leo's Node Server. How about that? Leo's Node. Now watch. In less than a minute, which is good because that's all I got left, this server is going to be up and running. It couldn't be easier. Ruby on Rails, GitLab, LAMP, MySQL, Node.js, Docker, Django. They have managed databases for PostgreSQL, so you can launch your database with a push of a button, while DigitalOcean handles maintenance and updates. It just works. Free daily backups with point-in-time recovery, standby nodes with automated failover, end-to-end security. And I love, and I've used this many times, they have over 2,000 open-source tutorials for developers to help you get it set up the way you want it. 99, there it is, by the way. It's ready. It's running, and I can log in. That's how fast my server, it's ready to go. Less than a minute. 9999 uptime SLA. You get cloud firewalls, full DNS management, and I just logged in to my own Node.js server and free round-the-clock tech support. Join over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, who rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. And if you sign up today, you get a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. do.co/twit. DigitalOcean, trusted by businesses, loved by developers. Mike in Corona. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Hey, Mike. Well, good. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was worried there for a second. Well, I'm not a millennial or a X or Y generation. I'm the dinosaur generation. So the question I had was, I've got AT&T for my TV, and for my internet and for my phone, which I never use.
Yep.
So, and my promotion deal just went away, and my package just about doubled. And I'm tired of going through all these different cable companies, getting a promo, and then it expires.
Yeah. So I went into the Comcast store a couple of years ago, and they said, just every year, come back in and get the new promo.
That's the hassle, though.
Yeah, come on. Just give me the price for good.
Exactly.
For crying out loud.
I've given the price to new people, and I've been with them for a while. Anyway, so what I'm deciding to do is just get an internet service provider, and then also possibly get like a Netflix or a Amazon.
Yeah, what you're proposing is something that's called cord cutting. But, of course, the first thing to point out is you're not, in fact, cutting the cord, because none of this would work unless you had an internet connection.
Exactly.
And often the internet connection comes from the same people who gave you the TV connection.
Yeah.
Your cable company or your phone company. And so if you want to stick it to the man, the problem is the man is still a requirement unless you can find. And some people are lucky enough, you know, if you live in an area where you have some forward-thinking internet service provider who's putting fiber in. We here in Northern California have a company called SonicNet that's doing that. And they do give you a real alternative. And then you can often save money. But in general, if you're going to the cable company or AT&T to get your internet so that you can do this, they've cleverly wired it up so it ends up costing you pretty much the same. They're not fools. They saw this coming, and the cable company said, well, first of all, what we're going to do is we're going to slowly raise the cost of internet. And then second, we're going to say, if you don't get our premium TV products, we're going to, I'm sorry, but we have to give you a surcharge on the internet. And they end up getting the internet up to $60 or $70. So here's the thing with AT&T. If you want to watch high quality HD video on, say, Netflix or something like that, you'll want a minimum of a consistent 25 megabits down. Okay?
25 megabits down?
Yeah. And it needs to be consistent so that if somebody else is downloading email or surfing the net or watching, if you've got two or three Netflix streams going, you're going to cut into that, right? So you'll need more than 25, but you need 25 per stream. That may be, overestimate. It's just been my experience that that's what you want. Netflix says it can be a little bit lower. Netflix says they have a internet speed recommendation page, and they say that for high def, you can get away with 5 megabits. That's not been my experience.
Huh.
25 megabits, they say, for ultra HD, you know, for higher quality. And I think that is the case. I would say you want 25 megabits, honestly. So look for that to start, 25 megabits. And then if you can get that on a consistent basis, even with other people using the internet, price that out. And then you're going to add online channels to provide the same content. You can. There are a number of companies, YouTube TV, tv.youtube.com, $40 a month. You get local stations in most markets, plus you get a few of the cable stations you're already getting. You might even get the ones you really care about. Sony has one called PlayStation View. There's Sling TV. So there's about five or six of these providers that will give you locals, and that's kind of nice. Then, or you can get an antenna up. If you're close enough to town, you can get an antenna up. And then you'd be able to, for free, get the stations. You're in Corona. You're close enough probably to get the LA stations, are you?
Yeah, I believe so,
yeah. So that's going to be free local. Then you add Netflix. That's $11 a month. That'll give you some content. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you get Prime for free, so that's nice. You can get HBO, but that's $15 a month. So
I don't do any of the pay stations.
Yeah, you have to figure out, you kind of make a budget of what you want. If you just get Netflix, if you've got Amazon Prime and you're already paying for that, that's free. That means, and you know, you can get Google or Apple's stuff for free and just rent movies you want to watch or TV shows you want to watch. You probably can cut your cable bill in half. Depends on what your cable bill is. And it certainly makes a big difference if you can get locals inexpensively for free.
Exactly. Yeah. You mentioned something about digital. Up north, you say you got a fiber optic line.
Yeah, if you can get a provider like that, boy, that's the way to go.
But AT&T says they have a fiber line, but they just put fiber to the street.
Yeah.
You don't get fiber all the way into the house.
Yeah, fiber. Well, you may. It depends. You should ask. So they have fiber to the curb. That means, depending on what they do, and you should ask them, you still may get very high speed in the home, depending on how they connect up that they call it the last mile problem. In their case, it's the last 20 feet problem. You just ask them, what am I going to get in the house? Nice, it doesn't do you any good to have a high speed connection to your neighborhood if you don't have a high speed connection from there into your house. I would look at the prices. I would look at the caps. It isn't always a savings. And, wait a minute. I'm here. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Leo. How are you? I see you live right now on TV.
Oh, well, I'll wave at you. How you doing?
I'm good. Can you help me with my Epson printer?
Yeah, tell me. What's going on?
I've gone round and round with Epson. I got new internet from Charter Spectrum. All right.
Turn off the radio because it's going to be very confusing here.
Right.
The phone is live, but the radio is delayed, so you're going to get a very confusing mix of stuff. I get now why he didn't talk for 40 seconds, because he was listening to the radio.
Okay,
go ahead. So what's going on with your Epson?
I can't scan from the printer to my computer.
Okay.
Epson says the channels are blocked. I called Charter. Charter says, now they said, okay, they can figure it out, but now they don't know if it's UDP or TCP.
Just tell them to unblock both. Thank you very much. So that's good tech support, right?
Well, I don't know. Is it UDP or TCP?
So here's the deal. When you nowadays, and for a long time, you couldn't really do this very effectively. You can scan over a Wi-Fi network. And companies like Epson had to figure this out because people weren't hardwiring their printers anymore. Used to be your printer, your all-in-one, would be connected via a USB cable or maybe an Ethernet cable. And you were able to use those to scan directly into the computer. But now it's network scanning. And I remember for a long time, this just wasn't a very good system. And I think that printer companies thought, and the scanner companies, well, you're not going to walk all the way down the hall, put something on the scanner, then walk all the way back. But I'll tell you right now how my setup is with my Epson. It's right next to my computer. It's just not connected via anything. It's on the Wi-Fi, because that way I can print from anywhere in the house. So my experience has been the best way to do this is to open up on the printer, open up the scanner, let the printer make the connection out to the scanner, and see if that works. If, in fact, you have, and it sounds like this is what's going on, for some reason you have some port blocking going on, turn off any firewall on your personal computer. Make sure that isn't firewalled. Windows and Mac both offer software firewalls. You probably don't need that if you're going through a router. There's no need for a firewall on your computer. Those days are gone. So turn those off. And then if you do have, for some reason, blocking, I don't see why you would. I don't think your router is going to have anything to do with it at that point. Open the connection from the computer to the printer rather than vice versa. And if they're asking, well, is it 2CP or UDP, say just open both. What they're talking about is something called port forwarding, and it really would only impact it if your computer wasn't on the internal network but was outside in the outside world, or your printer was in the outside world. That's because your router might be saying, I don't know what this is. You're sending me packets for printing? What is this? With port forwarding, you can tell the router, if you get a packet that's designed for port 3849, just send that to the printer. Let the printer do the work. But I don't think that's what's going on. I don't think that's the issue at all. Presuming that you're in the same land, you're next to each other. You're in the house, right? John in South Bend, Indiana. Are you there, John?
I am. Can you hear me?
I hear you great. Thank you for calling.
Hey, so I got a question for you there.
Yes, sir.
I bought these Wyze Cams there.
Aren't they great? W-Y-Z-E, wyzecam.com. Yeah.
I bought two of them, and I've got one facing my front door, okay, inside my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to figure out the best way. See, to do notifications because right now I'm getting buzzed all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't
because there's a lot of movement out there.
I want to have it to where it'll know like when people are home, so it'll stop.
Yeah, I'm not doing unfortunately the Wyze Cam, which really at $20 and $30 is the least expensive. They're taking over the market because they're a tenth the cost of some other cameras. One of the drawbacks is the software is not as sophisticated. So you can say, don't send me more than a few notifications in a certain period of time if you go in the settings. But I don't think you can say, hey, if somebody's home, don't send me a notification. That's just not a feature. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Bob in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well.
Good.
How you doing?
Hey, I'm just kind of wrestling with how to play video from my iPhone to my Windows 10 PC. You know, if I want to download, in this case, I want to download some Amazon Prime shows and then play them on my PC.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't think there's any way to do that that I know of. The iPhone has a couple of ways of playing things back. One is AirPlay, and I don't know Windows. I don't know of any way to support AirPlay on Windows. You might have the ability to Chromecast, but again, putting Chromecast on a Windows PC is also challenging. Microsoft uses its own technologies. Ironically, AirPlay is based on these technologies, DLNA and Miracast. But I don't think the iPhone, I don't know of any way to do iPhone on the Miracast. Is there some reason you don't want to stream it directly onto the PC from, you know, does the PC not have internet access?
No, so if I'm traveling, you know, if I'm on the airplane, I want to download some shows to watch. It'd be nicer to watch them on the laptop.
On a bigger screen, I see what you're saying.
Right, right. There is a program that Googled, and it's called Lonely Screen, but then I get worried about downloading some of these, some of these programs.
Lonely Screen, is that it?
It's called an AirPlay receiver for a PC.
Yeah, see, that's what you need is a way for, is it hardware? Let me look. Cast AirPlay to PC or Mac.
It's called Lonely Screen.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's just a download. Well, I've never tried it. Let me ask the chat room. Has anybody tried Lonely Screen? It's $14, $15 a year subscription. They do have a free trial download. And then it looks like it's basically an AirPlay support for Windows. I can think of no reason why that wouldn't work. It's not AirPlay doesn't require any particular hardware, just software that works on it. That's interesting. I mean,
you don't think there's any risk on something like this?
No, this looks
a tip of malware.
Maybe, but it looks like it's okay. You never know. I mean, you're absolutely right. Whenever you look at software on the internet, you don't know. You know, it could, in theory, be bad.
Right.
You're asking me. I don't have any experience with it, so I don't know. I'm asking the chat room. They don't seem to know. Here's another one they recommend called Air Server. Thank you, Mars Worm. AirServer.com.
Okay.
The problem with either of these on an airplane is they're not going to work because they use Wi-Fi. And I don't think you can. I mean, maybe you can if both the PC and I'm pretty sure I have never tried this, but that they have fairly sophisticated security working on that Wi-Fi access point in the air to keep people from doing this.
Yes, right.
So you're much more
a Wi-Fi connection.
You need something hardwired and
PC.
You can get HDMI out of an iPhone. There are Apple makes a Lightning to HDMI connector. So if your laptop supports HDMI in, most don't. It might have an HDMI port, but that's for out.
I do not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Surface Pro. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nice laptop. I think you just should stream it on the Surface and forget the iPhone.
Well,
You don't have the full networking capability you would have if you were on the ground, right?
Right.
And that's going to be the problem. Even if this Lonely Screen works, which it probably does, it might not, but I assume that it does. It's not going to work in the air.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sorry. Wish I could be of more help. There are. You know, there are other ways to do it. You can buy hard drives, for instance, that you can store content on if it's content that you have locally. and connect to the Surface that will play it back. You can also use your Surface to download offline content from Netflix, Amazon Prime, and other sources. I do that all the time. I do that on my iPad. I bring an iPad along on the flight, and before I get on the plane, I download. Not all movies on Netflix can be downloaded, but a lot of content can. Same with Amazon Prime. And I just download a bunch of stuff, and I can watch that. I had a great experience. I was staying in Newport Beach, as I mentioned, last couple of days. Went down there for some business meetings. Stayed at the Balboa Bay Club, and it's the best experience I've had. And I hope hotels start to do this. I was able to Chromecast from my phone to the TV, the hotel TV. Instead of renting movies at $20 a pop, I was able to watch my Netflix shows. We had to put my phone on the same Wi-Fi network, the hotel's Wi-Fi network, as the TV. The TV had so there must be some sort of device they're using, some service they're using. But the TV had a way to pair to the phone, and then I was able to Chromecast from Netflix right to the hotel TV. That's awesome. I'd love to see more of that. I can see why hotels don't do it. They make so much money renting movies. There are Wi-Fi devices. Wi-Fi in the air, that's probably not a good idea. They don't want you to be setting up a Wi-Fi server in the airplane. I'm almost certain they'll block that if they can. But anything hardwired you could do. Anybody has a good idea, 8888-ASK-LEO. That'd be a good tip to have. How to watch content from your iPhone on your laptop while you're in the air. Mike in Cabo San Lucas. Oh, I bet it's beautiful down there. Hi, Mike. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mike, are you there? Oh, that's not Mike. I'm sorry. It looks like it's Robert. I got different things on my screen. It's Robert in Brea. Hi, Robert.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Hello, Leo.
Hello, Robert.
Hey, I've been listening to your show a lot. Got a lot of great tips from you, so I'd like to thank you.
Thank you for listening.
I've got a problem here with a homebrew computer. It's a Windows 7 Asus Z87A.
Okay.
And I have tried multiple different USB 3 hubs, and none of them work. I plug them in. It goes out, does the auto search for the drivers, and it always comes back, no drivers found. So I can't find any hubs that work. I've even contacted Asus, and they have no help.
So you're plugging the USB hub. Is it a powered hub?
No, sir.
Okay. Sometimes that's an issue because if you put other devices that need power on that hub, they're going to draw too much power from the computer. It's not going to work. But let's get that hub connected. Have you tried all the different ports on the Asus?
I've tried all the different plugs on the Asus. I've also got a add-on USB card, and that does not work with the add-on USB card either. And interestingly, I have some USB docks made by Ultra. They don't make them anymore, but those work.
So when you say doesn't work, you're plugging in the hub and then plugging something into the hub and you don't see that thing?
But I plug it in and it pops up with the message searching for drivers, and it comes back, no drivers found.
Well, you got me. And the clock on the wall says I'm out of time. Hang on the line. We'll talk after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We're going to talk smartphones and smartwatches, phone numbers such as it is. See, I think the phones are working now. I think 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number, 888-ASK-LEO. 827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'd love to hear from you if you have an answer or a question. 29 days till Game of Thrones comes back. Time magazine has an article on it. It says if you watched every episode, an episode a day, you could catch up. There's 67 episodes total. You'd have to work pretty harder. It's 29 days away. You're going to have to watch 2 episodes a day with a few extra. Actually, this is a post they put up in February, and they've updated, but the it has kind of homework for every day. How many episodes you have to watch? What's it about? The name of the episode? Recap? Wow, it's hard work these days watching TV. You can't just sit down and watch a show once a week. No, you got to put some energy into it. 8888 Ask Leo. Line 4, Mike, Cabo San Lucas. I think we got Mike now. Hey, Mike.
How you doing, Leo?
How's things in Cabo?
It's gorgeous down here. 75 degrees, sun shining like crazy.
Do you live down there or are you just visiting?
Well, we have a house down here, so we're down here about 4 months out of the year.
Now you're making me jealous. That's great.
Come on down.
I will. I love Cabo. So what's going on?
So we have, like I said, we're down here a lot. So we have a TV down here, and we got high-speed internet last year.
Nice.
And
now I can come down. Now it's official. I've been waiting for that. I can't go anywhere if I can't get high-speed internet.
It's DSL. We've been struggling to get fiber, which they have in the neighborhood, but they don't have an open port for us yet. But so they come soon.
Well, that's encouraging. That's great.
So we get about 10 megs, so it's not bad.
It's not enough to watch a lot of TV, but it's. Do you have bandwidth caps on it? In other words, can you run out? Can you run out of bandwidth at the end of the month? Do they say, "Oh, you've seen enough. Stop."
No, it's unlimited.
That's good. So, what can I do to make your life better?
So we are able to watch TV. We have a dish system at home, so we have a hopper there, and we can use Dish Anywhere. We watch lots of stuff on Dish Anywhere, and it works pretty well. Sometimes the network slows down, and it drops out and rebuffers for a few seconds, but it's really great. But there's other services I'd like to get, and I can't because they say it's not available in your country.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you wanted to watch Netflix, they'd say, well, you're going to get the Mexican version of Netflix, not the U.S. version. Even if you're a U.S. subscriber and you're on a U.S. credit card, they know where you are.
But, yes, but so I used the VPN.
Right.
And it worked for Netflix, but it doesn't work for Amazon and some other services. So then I shut it off. Or use a VPN that says, "Oh, you're on a VPN. We don't know where you are, so we're not sending you the service."
Man, they're getting wise to it. Yeah. So for a long time, people used VPNs, virtual private networks.
Yeah.
The way that works, you're logging in from Cabo, but you're logging into a VPN server that's in another country, say in the U.S. in your case. So you emerge on the public internet from the U.S. However, there are ways to detect a VPN, unfortunately, and they're not perfect. You know, part of the way they do it is they say, oh, the IP address that you seem to be coming from is actually a block owned by a VPN provider. So sometimes just moving VPNs, trying a different VPN will work. I don't think there's anything inherently in the – I don't believe there's anything inherently in the packets that you're sending that would say, oh, this is a VPN. It's not like you're coming from a different port. I think they're mostly saying, well, we know that IP address. We've seen that IP address before. Let me ask, actually, you know where else we block VPNs? In our chat room, because we don't want people to use VPNs to anonymize themselves and, you know, be spammers and that kind of thing. So maybe the chat room mods know how we detect that you're on a VPN. I'm not going to guess. It's just basically based on the IP address, that there's nothing inherently in the traffic that says, oh, yeah, this is coming through a VPN. Some people are saying maybe the MTUs, some of the parameters could maybe be a little bit different if you're on a VPN, and so they might notice that's a little different. That's possible. That's possible. I would say if the VPN you're using is detected, try a different VPN. Try another provider. There are a lot of good providers out there. And I bet you some of them are detected by Amazon and some aren't. I don't think that that's a perfect system for detecting. So that would be the only advice, is try another VPN. Somebody in the chat room says, well, whatever you're doing, it doesn't work very well. I'm on a VPN right now. Yeah, that's probably the case. I would try a different one. The other thing you could do, might be the best way to do this, is to set up a VPN server at your home in California and surf to that. So we talk about one of our sponsors, Remote PC, and how you can use Remote PC to surf the net from a home computer, from your office computer. It's the same idea. You go through the tunnel to your home router and then out into the real world. And at that point, I don't think you'll be detected as a VPN, unless they're awfully sophisticated, because it'll look like you're at home. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's normal. Mike's surfing from his house in California. Let him have all that great content. So there are a couple of ways to do this. I mean, if you're sophisticated, of course, you could set up your own server, you know, use an old computer or a Raspberry Pi or something, set up a server at home. But the easiest way to do it is to look for a router. This would be for your home router that supports VPN, not outbound, but inbound, supports a VPN server. And there are routers that do this. My friend Steve Gibson uses his PFSense router to do this. Now, PFSense is a more sophisticated way to do it, but definitely more powerful. PFSense is a open source firewall, and he runs that on a particular bit of hardware. It's not very expensive. A PFSense appliance. I'm trying to remember who he uses. There are a number of PFSense appliances, and that you could then have this box in your house. You would log into it remotely from Cabo and have a VPN connection. You would use on your system in Cabo, you would use the VPN software to log into it. What is maybe the chat remembers the name, the brand name. And most new routers will support VPN as well. I have a feeling that would help. John in Florida is quoting Eric Duckman in our chat room, said he set up his VPN on his PFSense box. Spectrum did detect it. Wow. That's interesting. I need to know a little bit better about how these companies like Amazon and Netflix detect a VPN and how you would get around that. I would think, though, if you're using your home VPN server, remember, your client is in Cabo, your server is in California, and that's where you're merging on the public internet. So you need to set up your own VPN server. Almost any good router, new router, will do that. Interesting problem. Maybe we're going to have more on this, I think. Yeah, it knew I was on a VPN, even though it was coming from my own IP address. I don't know. We'll have to dig a little deeper into that. It's an interesting conundrum. And honestly, you're not doing anything illegal. And I don't even think that Amazon or Netflix really care. I think that it's the content providers who are saying, well, no, we don't want anybody from Mexico watching our content. I don't care if they get it legitimately in America. Because you're watching your own content, right? The content you purchased. I don't see why that would bother them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. It's an interesting conundrum. I'm going to think more about this VPN conundrum. And I'm very curious how they're doing it. So have you tried anything like that, Mike, using a VPN server at home in California?
I haven't tried that yet, but I've tried what I was thinking was that I would do that. And the problem is, like you said, streaming. Can I stream from here to my VPN and then it would go out to the internet? I know I can get to my network at home, stuff on my network at home with the VPN, but can I go out to the internet from there as well with streaming?
Yeah. So basically, if you have I guess it would depend how it's implemented, but that's the whole theory is just so when you use a commercial VPN provider, you're putting the VPN client on your computer at Cabo and you're connecting to their server somewhere in the United States to give you a US IP address. That's exactly what you'd be doing. It would be a server somewhere in the United States, but instead of being some commercial service, it'd be your server in your house and then to the outside world.
Right.
So that's how it works. It's the same idea. The problem is we don't know how Amazon and others are detecting VPNs.
I've looked into that a little bit, and there's something called deep packet inspection.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've also tried DNS proxy, which didn't work really well either.
Yeah. Deep packet inspection means that they look into deeply into your traffic. And that probably is what one of our chatters was talking about, where they look at the MTU size. And if it's a size that's not typical for a normal user, if it's adjusted as it sometimes is on VPNs, then they would say, well, you must be on a VPN. Let me see. Without my test, I wonder how you would know if it's on a VPN. How to passively detect VPN? Because I don't think there's anything in your traffic that should say, oh, this came through a VPN.
Right. Doesn't make sense.
I'll ask Steve Gibson. He would know, if anybody would know. Deep packet inspection. But what are they inspecting that would tell them? It doesn't have now it has a red badge of courage on it. Oh, he's using a VPN. Well, okay. I'm looking at a Quora discussion on how you do this. I'm not clear. The gap in my knowledge here is the issue. But I would think that one way that would help is if you were coming out of your house. But I guess it's not a guarantee that would make the difference. So, but we're just guessing. We're spitballing here. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah. That's awesome that you finally have some decent internet.
Yeah.
That would be an absolute vital condition for me to consider living there. If you consider, I'm just, this isn't that useful. Detecting VPN on the server side. This is a Medium article.
The other thing that's interesting to me is that Netflix is much better at not buffering than the Dish system. And they must be just how they send it and how the apps take it apart and put it together to stream it.
Well, one of the things Netflix does is they put local servers in your ISP's NOC. And so you're getting it directly from the ISP as opposed to the public internet. That makes a huge difference. Yeah, the MTU value. So, your packets encapsulate another packet. So, yes, one way to do this is to set the MTU value. So VPNs typically change that. So you can fix that. OpenVPN doesn't decrease interface MTU, but does decrease MSS inside the encapsulated packet. So yeah, there are. I guess you can look at the packets and say, there's some fingerprint that the VPN's leaving behind. But if you knew what they were, you could turn those off. Yeah, right. Use generic MSS values instead of. Yeah. So there's a good Medium article. I'll put this in our show notes. Let me paste this into the chat room. That maybe if you read this, you would know what to change in your own VPN so it wouldn't look like a VPN.
Okay.
Good luck. It's a good project. It's worthwhile, right?
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is winter is coming. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Take
Bye.
Care. Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I'm just reading an article, very detailed article, on detecting a VPN. A virtual private network. And there are ways, that you can do this. And, of course, Hulu, Netflix, and others are trying to detect whether people are coming in from other countries so they can block them. But, the kind of traditional reason to do this is people outside of the UK who want to watch BBC television shows using the BBC iPlayer. And iPlayer, and rightly so. I mean, I understand why the BBC does this. The BBC is paid for by television license fees in the UK. Everybody who has a TV pays a fee that goes to the British Broadcasting Company so they can make great programming. And if we're outside the UK and watching those shows, well, we're kind of free riding on that. So iPlayer doesn't work outside the UK. A lot of people turn to VPNs to pretend they were in the UK and thereby able to watch those BBC shows. Setting the ethics of that aside, and it probably is kind of unethical, there are some technical issues as well. And, of course, companies like the BBC are doing everything they can to prevent it. Under certain circumstances, you can kind of see a fingerprint from a VPN system, that you've been going through a VPN system. And it does have to do with unusual settings for MTU or MSS. These are packet data, maximum segment sizes, MSS, maximum transmission unit is MTU. These are settings that are kind of standardized in normal traffic, but are often changed in VPN traffic. So if you knew what they were looking for, you probably, if you had control of a VPN server, could figure out a way to bypass the things they're looking for. I don't want to talk too much about that. It's an interesting question, an interesting puzzle. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones. We go, and Ken is on the line from West Hills, California. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Leo. It's marvelous listening to the way your mind works as you work.
You can actually hear it grinding away, can't you?
Oh, it's impressive as hell.
Well, I don't know about that, but good. I'm glad you like it.
I do. Got a question for you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we've got a couple of Samsung 8500 series TVs.
Yes.
What I would like to do is I'd like to use a Toslink output and have it end up something black box, Toslink black box into my Sennheiser 280 headphones.
And those headphones only take what kind of input?
Oh, tip, ring, and sleeve.
Oh! It's actual headphones, not a space station. It's an actual headphone.
No, sir.
I get it.
The physical set of ear cans.
So I believe Toslink is one of the digital connections that you get out of TVs. It's an optical cable, and I'm sure there are a variety of Toslink to analog converters out there. That can't be too hard to find.
I spent the morning on Amazon.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Oh, yes, sir.
Here's the Porta $12.50 Porta audio converter. DAC. It's going to be DAC, which is digital to analog converter.
Right.
It will take Toslink to analog stereo audio. Yeah, it'll take it's just a little black box. It'll do looks like what you want it to do. It's got a headphone jack on one end. It's got a Toslink SPDIF. You have SPDIF coming out, SPDIF connector on the other end.
Right.
And it's going to be a DAC. And that's, you know, DACs are very commonplace. Every telephone that can play music has a DAC in it. Every stereo has a DAC in it, because most music these days is stored digitally and then converted to analog so that you can listen to it on your headphones or your speaker.
So, you were able to go right to it. I haven't found it.
So the first place I'd go, I'm looking at one on Amazon that's $12.50, P-O-R-T-T-A, and I haven't any experience with it, whether it works or not, but my guess is it does. But if you want to kind of get it from a more reliable provider, go to monoprice.com.
Oh, God. I mean, yes, of course.
Of course. The king of cables. So yes. You want a Toslink DAC.
Right.
Which sounds like a joke.
Yeah, no,
they make one for $20, a monoprice digital to analog audio converter. And it's exactly, it looks like the same box, but at least you're getting it from somebody reliable.
Okay, so then what you're describing then is going to be presenting to me a pair of a left channel, right channel analog output.
Yeah, exactly.
Which means then I got to stuff it through an amplifier and then plug the headphones.
Oh, you might have to amplify it for your headphones. That's a good point.
All the amplifiers I own, not one has a headphone stereo headphone jack.
Well, now you want to go to headphone.com, because they make a lovely set of headphone amplifiers of a variety of different qualities, and I wouldn't even be surprised to see Toslink in analog out with an amplifier. Headphones.com. Let me just go check on this, because they make great or sell great headphone amplifiers, and I bet you they have one that does A to D. Or D to A is what you want.
Yeah, it's got to go from D to A. The nice thing about Toslink, it's a low-profile cable.
I like Toslink, and every TV comes with Toslink these days. That's kind of the standard. Let me just look at their headphone amps.
I'm just trying to keep it simple.
Yeah, yeah, and of course they have $1,700 Estelle and Kern headphone amps. You don't need that.
Yeah, exactly. I see them for $600. Yeah,
those are really good DACs that, you know, audiophiles with golden ears are going to be able to tell the difference. And maybe headphones.com isn't the best place to get this, but let me just check.
Okay.
Because a good headphone amp can be very pricey, you know, because there's golden ear people. Yeah.
Gold-plated DACs. I don't need that. I'm definitely one. FIO has one.
$55. FIIO A3.
Okay.
There you go. And that's look at that. That's a portable amplifier headphone amp. But Johnny, does it have analog in? I mean, digital in. It looks like it's got. What is it? Let's look at the back here.
FIIO is a good. It's a good name.
That's a great name. I use a lot of FIO stuff. They have excellent DACs. Yeah, get the mono price DAC, and then so $70 total. Yeah.
Marvelous.
So this is a portable headphone amplifier, very small, about the size of a whiskey flask.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have to get the SPDIF to analog converter, and then you amplify it. A good headphone amp makes a big difference, actually.
Yeah.
I've used FIOs for years.
Excellent. Give my best regards to your friend Steve Gibson.
I shall. You like that show?
Not only just like the show, I remember I was reading Steve Gibson's columns.
Oh yeah,
InfoWorld.
Yeah, I did too. I was a huge fan.
And Leo, I love you. I've been following you since DOS days.
Oh wow, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it for the very kind words.
Thank you for the info.
My pleasure. Take care. Bye, Ken.
Bye bye.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88-88, Ask Leo. I was talking to Ken off the air. He's a longtime listener, loves our security podcast, Security Now, with Steve Gibson. And he mentioned that he's been a Steve Gibson fan since the 90s when Steve used to write a column for InfoWorld. And it made me think, gosh, I used to read those too. I haven't seen those columns in ages. I was wondering if there was anywhere I could find them. Well, it turns out I can. Google has scanned some of these old InfoWorld magazines in the Google Book Project, and you can find them. You can find them, including pictures of Steve Gibson looking quite dapper from many years ago. So, Steve, if you want to read some of Steve's old articles, you can go back to Steve Gibson Tech Talk column that go back to 1992. Wow. I thought, man, that's a long time ago. And then I realized, I've been doing this show since then. Oy. I started doing computer talk radio right about then with John C. Dvorak, another legendary name in the tech business. All those magazines are gone. Those days are long behind us now. It's all on YouTube these days. David on the line from Tustin, California is next. Hi, David.
Hi there, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm a high school teacher in Southern California in Orange County. I teach graphic design. And we have been, for the last couple of years, receiving a CTE grant, a federal grant, allowing us to bring tech into the classroom. And I'm looking at a ViewSonic interactive display, the 86-inch, the touchscreen, and I'm wondering if that is the top of the line or if you know of any other units that would be better than that.
Yeah, there are quite a few. I'm not an expert on educational technology tools. I've used a few of them. ViewSonic's been around for ages, and I'm sure it's very good. The things to look at, of course, are the brightness. That's going to be an issue, the response on the display. If you ask me, I would say, and I think they're probably prohibitively priced for a school, but that the top of the line is Microsoft's Surface Hub, which is a pretty sophisticated device. They bought a company that made these giant screens, and they do have multi-touch screen solutions. Because they come from Microsoft, they're essentially Windows PCs built into them. They have a lot of collaborative and interactive stuff. I don't know if they're designed for the school, though. The ViewSonic, as I remember, has a separate projector, right, that projects onto the screen, or is it a direct?
No, it's like a gigantic Cintiq.
It's a direct view. Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be the best way to do it. That's going to be more expensive.
Well, this one's around $10,000.
Yeah, so yeah, these are pricey. I would look at just to see what's out there. The Surface Hub has collaboration features you probably don't need, obviously.
Right.
ViewSonic is a great name in this kind of thing. I guess I don't know much about it, and I'll open this up to our audience and see what they have to say about it. There's probably teachers out there who use the ViewSonic and others as well. What do you teach?
I teach graphic design and illustration.
So you want to show the kids as you're doing stuff? You want to? You're running it from
a little bit of that, pulling up ads, logos, other
examples
of graphic design to critique.
Okay.
You know, drawing and brainstorming. Since that's got a 20-touch, you know, capabilities on that particular unit, I can have several students brainstorming at the same time.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, because most touch devices on computers are 10, because you only have 10 fingers. But if you had multiple students, that's very cool. So several people could stand up there at the board and work with it.
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
I can demonstrate Photoshop and illustrative tutorials, things like that.
Yeah, I'm just not an expert in this category, but I'm sure there are people listening, and I invite them to call 8888-ASK-LEO or get to our chat room at irc.twit.tv or the website techguylabs.com, because at techguylabs.com you can leave comments, and maybe over the next few days people will have something to say. Those ViewSonics sound good. That's a lot of money. But I'm thrilled you have the budget for that. That's great.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Leo. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah, boy, that's a lot. But these, I'm looking at them online. I'm looking at the ViewSonic page right now, and they do look awfully good. The ViewBoard interactive flat panel displays, 20-point touch. Who would have thought of that? That's great. More than one student can use them, or you could have a teacher and a student using it together. Of course, when I'm looking at the ViewSonic page, they've got classrooms with seven of them. At that price, I think one would be good. A number of people are pointing out that Google also has the Jamboard, which is a lot less expensive. And that is an interesting idea. The Jamboard is kind of focused, again, like a Microsoft solution, on collaboration. So it's as much about the way the Jamboard works as people can have Pixel books or Android phones and can be contributing to the big board up in front of the classroom. That may be something you'd like to look at. They're about half the price. They're about $5,000. And it is from Google. I haven't heard a lot about the Jamboard lately. 55-inch 4K display. The nice thing is you can project to it. I'm gathering it uses Chromecast technology. It has its own whiteboard and pens. It might be, if you wanted to get a less expensive device, maybe get two instead. It would be another one to look at. It's just Google Jamboard, Jamboard. I think that's kind of cool. I wanted to get one for our studio for a long time. Maybe I will. You just gave me an excuse, David. Susan in Valencia, California. Hi, Susan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have a sister who lives in Oregon. I'm in California, and she's completely tech unsavvy. She does have a smartphone, though, but the problem is every time I try to text her pictures, she can never open them.
Oh.
And I've tried to set her up with email, and she can't work it.
What kind of phone does she have?
She can't really tell me, and I think she has limited access.
Got it. I got it.
Access to the internet.
So, it may be that her carrier, I don't know which system she's got. I mean, generally, when you text images to somebody, they can see them. She can't see any of the images. Can you send her emojis or GIFs or anything else?
emojis seem to work all right, but
no images.
No, and this has gone through two phones, and she doesn't even know what her carrier is.
Does she have a computer? Does she have another way of looking at these?
No, she can't work email. She has no computer. I think her access to the internet is limited, but again, yeah. She can't quite.
So another way to try it is with Google Photos. So she'd need to install Google Photos on this phone, whatever this phone is. If she can't, then this isn't going to work. But maybe she can install Google Photos on there. You can share, and actually this is a better way to share photos. I often do it this way, is instead of sending the photo, you send a link to an album. You can make that a shared album. So she could put photos in there, and you could put photos in there, and she could look at them anytime, and not via text.
I've tried to send her links to videos on my Google Drive, and doesn't
work. Try, just see if she can get the Google Photos app on her phone. If she can get the app on her phone, this will work. It's just maybe her phone is not a smartphone. Maybe it's just a dumb phone, in which case, I don't know if this is going to work. But if she has a smartphone and could put Google Photos on it, any Android phone should probably already have it on there. You can explicitly say via her Gmail address, share this photo album with her. And then she should, even with intermittent internet, she should be able to see it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We love that sound. It means it's time for our disco duck himself, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer and our gizmo wizard at gizwiz.biz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you? Yeah, it's Disco Dick.
Disco Dick. Oh, did I say Disco Duck?
Yeah.
Remember that song? Disco
Duck. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So did you survive the bomb cyclone? Or did that not hit? That did not hit Disneyland.
No, it did not.
Oh, thank
it
goodness!
Did not.
Are the daisies popping up through the snow?
The crocuses have made it through. As has the forsythia.
Forsythia?
Yes, no, forsythia. I usually just say the yellow flowers.
The yellow ones. Oh, that's nice. The forsythia are in blossom.
Are in blossom.
Well, Dick joins us every week, rain or shine or forsythia, to give us a gizmo or a gadget that has caught his eye of late. What do you have
for us? Well, you know what? This came from Motoris, an ex-cop who sent this on to the Gizmo show. And it's such a clever idea. I bought one. I actually found one that had more features than the one Mo had found. And then when I got it, I like to try everything, and I go, oh, you know, I just have one problem. I don't have a car. So I thought, well, Leo.
I have a car.
Leo has many cars. So, Leo, this is what it is. It's called the car doorstep.
The car
doorstep. Doorstep. Okay?
Okay.
And it's a little 3.5-inch step.
Yeah.
That latches on to where your car, when you slam it, where the latch catches.
When you slam it?
When you slam the door of your car.
Oh, yeah, the latch on the door.
Yeah, the latch, the little U-shaped latch. It
doesn't that make it hard to close the door?
This is when you want to climb up to the roof of your car.
Oh, I get it. So you open the door and you attach this foot step. So you can get
and
up
now
on
you
the
have
roof.
Like an 18-inch higher step, and now you can wash the roof. Or mainly, this is for like SUVs or cars that have roof racks.
Yeah, when you're loading the rack for your trip, that kind of thing.
Now, the one I found also has a built-in seat cutter and a built-in.
Oh, so you keep it in the glove compartment.
Exactly. And then at the tip.
By the way, Dick. You said seat cutter. You probably mean seat belt cutter.
Seat belt cutter.
Because I don't think you really want to carry around a seat cutter.
No, in Brooklyn. You know, I'm from Brooklyn, kid. Hey, you got the seat cutter?
Cut that seat, man.
Cut that seat.
I can't get out of the car. We'll just cut the seat.
Yeah. Right. No, I only wish it's worked on my boat because I have a heck of a time reaching the
this is a good
roof
idea.
Of my... And it's very cheap. It's I think it was $18.49 early today, and a little check mark if you want $4 off.
And now, it holds, it says on your site, 500 pounds. So
yes, I picked that up from the box that it came in.
Wow.
So I think this is a really neat thing.
This is cool. And, and you got a video by the guy who suggested it. He's a former
Motari's. Yeah, exactly. So
it's him using it.
Put it in the little latch. You know, does even your electric car have this kind of a latch?
I think all cars do. I don't know. You know, it's funny. You just take it for granted.
No.
I'm thinking it probably does. I don't know. I'll have to check.
Yeah. When I saw it, I said, Leo could use this. And I said, wait a minute. I thought maybe you had a little elevator.
Look, Mo's going up. He's going up. He's got it. He's all the way.
And now he's there.
He's sleeping on the top of his car. Oh, that's a great...
I just have to thank you, Leo, for recommending the 3M mouse pad.
Oh, yeah. I'm using one right now. I love these things.
I got it yesterday. It's really great. Very accurate.
You'd never heard of that?
No.
I think it's the same material. See, 3M really has only had one invention the whole time. And they've just got different ways to do it. So that's how they came up with Post-it notes. You know, they're trying to make it adhesive for the stepladder so that they could attach tread mounts to the stepladder. And they came up with an adhesive that would just... It didn't hold very well, but it made it perfect for Post-it notes. And I think that actually these mouse pads, they're held onto the desk with the same adhesive, and they look exactly like stepladder treads. So I'm thinking,
this is a two-for-one deal.
These are, but they're great because especially modern optical mice, you know, not the ones with the rolling balls, but they don't work on a lot of desk surfaces. So that, that 3M.
Oh, it's for mice. I'm standing on it.
Oh, Lord. Well, that works that way too.
Because I was slipping around at my desk.
Yeah, that's exactly. If you're standing on your desk, or you could put it on your thing, what do you call it?
The car doorstep. The car doorstep.
Oh,
put it on that.
Fancier name. The car doorstep. Yes. If you go, you know where you can find out about all this stuff on Dick's website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. If you click the big button that says the Gizwiz visits the tech guy, that's me. You see a picture of me in my younger days. and it'll take you to his article. But right below that, there's another link that you might want to take a little gander at. It's called the What the Heck Is It contest. A chance for you to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Dick will autograph it for you. Well, he's going to at least six people with the correct answer and 12 for people with the wrong answer, but it's funny. And if there's more than 6 and 12, he'll do drawings. But this is always a fun contest. You have till the end of April to identify bubble wrap, basically, right? That's what it is. It's bubble wrap.
All I know, it came from 3M.
You're not stretching not us really. Here. This looks easy.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's not bubble wrap then. I don't know what it is. It's are those suction cups?
I'm going to tell you.
No. But you can tell him, and it's a fun game to play. While you're there, you can also find out about Dick's great Gizwiz podcast. He does that every week with Chad Johnson. Gizwiz.tv. Is there anything else I can plug for you, Dick?
No, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and I'll see the folks later after you
even though the show is winding up on the radio, I'm going to keep recording because I'm going to Hawaii next month. We're going to Kauai, and they don't have apparently electricity there, so I'm going to...
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to... I'm going to record ahead, and that way we'll get a fresh show for you. So if you want to be part of that show in April... Keep the phones going at 8888 Ask Leo, and I'll answer another hour or so of calls. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay. See you next week.
We'll see you next week, my friend. If you're on the line, hang on the line. More calls to come. I'm going to see if I can get one more in before the show wraps up. Tony is on the line from Pickens, South Carolina. Hello, Tony.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My
daughter is going to Turkey for the summer, Istanbul. And I've been trying to just figure out phone solutions for her. I was thinking about Google Fi and just getting a Moto G6, get those relatively,
That's exactly what I did when we were in Turkey. T-Mobile's good. Fi's even better. $10 it's the same price in Turkey as it would be in the U.S. It works great. And those Moto G6s are very affordable. I think that's an excellent choice. And that way she has a U.S. number. So she can always, be reached.
Yeah, great.
Unlimited texts international. I did, and it worked great.
Awesome. All right.
She's going to have fun. The Blue Mosque, Hagia Sophia. Is she studying there?
Right. It's part of an educational thing. So
what a great,
this makes me feel good.
What a great experience for her. She's going to love it. where the East meets the West, Asia and Europe. Across the bridge, you go into Asia. It's kind of a mad.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. I'm jealous.
Yeah. Well, tell her all the best. Yeah, Google Fi is a great choice. Thanks for the call. Have a great one, Tony. And you all, thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security and security now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.